Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Namaste, yogis. This is Andrew Seeley here to welcome you to the Yoga Revealed podcast. And today, I have another powerfully transformational interview for you. From addiction to empowerment, we go on a journey of truth and self-study with Recovery 2.0 founder, Tommy Rosen. His sincere passion for curing addiction through yoga has enabled him to gather like-minded thought leaders from a variety of expertise to come together online to teach you about the power that you have to stop addiction and start taking your life by the wheel. Today, Tommy Rosen reveals his journey through addiction to recovery and shares his wisdom in finding a better way through yoga.
I don't want any student anyone who comes to my class, I don't want them to believe anything that I say. I want them to experience what they experience and make up their own mind about it. That's the beautiful thing about yoga.
Be clear with your intentions as we start anew. Find resilience with Tommy Rosen and find a clear view on this episode of the Yoga Revealed podcast with Tommy Rosen. Namaste, yogis. This is Andrew Seeley here to welcome you to the Yoga Revealed podcast. It brings me great honor to be here sitting beside the one and only Tommy Rosen right here in Boulder, Colorado. And I just actually finished up taking his amazing class where we explored consciousness. And now we sit across from each other for a beautiful podcast interview. How are you feeling today, Tommy?
I would say that it would be hard for me to feel much better. Seriously.
The presence of life is beautiful.
Yeah.
Definitely. So we really like to start off the podcast with a little bit of your past and going back into some of the days that were obviously different from now and how yoga was first revealed to you.
I'm coming from a background, as many people know, of addiction in my life. First part of my life was marked by an unbelievable search for comfort, ease. And I was looking in places that brought me short-term comfort, but there were always long-term prices to pay. So I really have come to understand that a person who struggles with addiction lives in such a way where short-term gain, long-term loss is acceptable to them. And if you live that way, just mathematically, it's not going to work out. You know, you gain a little ease, a little comfort in the short term, but you have to give up something. Some consequence, some price needs to be paid that's much bigger than the short term, you know, ease that you were able to get. And over time, that doesn't work out. That's an unsustainable situation. And so I learned that the hard way. I played it out all the way.
Yeah.
And so drugs and alcohol, And anywhere a person can avoid themselves or avoid the present moment, it all became possible, right, on the road of addiction. But thankfully and miraculously, there was an end to that. Mm. I reached a bottom. And the bottom for me, my teacher has clarified what a bottom is for me. And a bottom is just that moment when a person is finally ready to tell the truth.
So at what time in your life did that happen? Like, give me a synopsis as to where you were in your life and what brought you to that place.
I was in Boulder, Colorado.
Wow.
Where we are now today. Six blocks from here is the home where I was, where I reached my first bottom. And I had been awake for 3 days, smoking cocaine and doing heroin. And that's where it had gotten to for me. It was 1989 in the summertime. I woke up and I no longer could live the way that I had been living, but I had no idea how else I could possibly live. So I was in that place, that very, very special place of crisis. I was cornered. I had cornered myself through my behavior, and all my actions had led to that moment. And it's a moment where I really see it as a crossroads. You can die or you can live. And I picked up the phone, not sure which of those choices I wanted, but I called my father. And I was going to tell him everything but the truth. And so, you know, I said, look, Dad, my girlfriend broke up with me. School's not going very well. You know, I don't have any money. Like, just bemoaning my life at every level. And he just cut right to the chase, and he said, I know you're on drugs. I know you're on drugs. And this time, you have to get help. You have to go get some help. And I said, no, I'm not going to go. I'm not going. And my dad started to cry. And there was a moment of grace there. In that moment, I glimpsed myself through his pain. I was able to see beyond myself for the first time in many, many, many years. And I saw that my behavior, my addiction, had deeply affected my father and my family around me. And I saw that this was leading nowhere. I was going nowhere. I was truly stuck. I said, Dad, stop crying. I'll go. Please stop crying. I'll go get some help. And I went off to rehab. That was 1989. I think I arrived at rehab July 25th, 1989, up in Minnesota. And that's where my life began anew. I had died a spiritual death. I had died an ego death. The worst thing that could have happened to me was that, and it happened. And so off I went. I was in a state at that time. I was in a state of desperation. I wouldn't say I was in a state of surrender, and there is a difference. But about 2 weeks into that experience, a treatment at rehab, at this rehab center called Hazelden, by the way, which is a wonderful center, I was shown a level of love and kindness by a counselor, and I broke down, and tears over the past that I'd held for 10, maybe 15 years, tears started to flow. And it was that moment where I surrendered. And I said, you know, these people might not be against me. They might actually want, they might be in it for my well-being. And so I started to open up to what was happening there in that process. And you begin again, you know, you begin again. You get out of there after 30 or 40 or 50, whatever it was, 50 days for me. And I came back to Boulder and I began again.
So at this new space in your life, when you began again, did you find yoga right away?
I did not find yoga right away. So when I got out, it was late August or September 89. And I was looking at my life, and this is very important for the practice of yoga and what I've learned since then. I was looking at my recovery as being segmented out from the rest of my life. Recovery was not a part of my life. It was just something I will leave my life and I'll go to a 12-step meeting, for example. Like, I knew I had to go to meetings and be around community. So I'd go to the meeting, I'd check off that box for the day, and then I'd go back to my life. So you see, there was this segmented, unintegrated approach to my life at that point. And so that's going to be another unsustainable way to move forward and progress through life. Because you're going to eventually, if you're not invested with your heart in actions that you're taking, those actions are going to become boring or fruitless. You'll stop taking those actions because you're not really behind it in your heart. And that's exactly what happened. So I stopped going to 12-step meetings. I stopped being involved in recovery activity at any level. And about a year and a little bit more after I had gotten sober, after I'd gone off to treatment, I relapsed and I started using drugs again. Mm. But I didn't go right back to the hard drugs. I was sort of dabbling. Mm. I was in this middle phase.
Little things. You're like, maybe I'll try a little alcohol. Yeah, or
drink a little bit. I'll smoke a little pot. Maybe, you know, this, that, or the other thing. But I truly, in my heart of hearts, was terrified of cocaine and heroin. Mm. And there was so much fear there. But I'll make a very long story short for you. I came to the second bottom of my life. And the second bottom is in some ways more powerful than the first bottom. The first bottom is a bottom of desperation. The second bottom is the bottom where you're like, I have to get this thing. Not because someone in rehab told you, not because your parents told you or friends told you, but because you know that you have this condition. This thing is happening. It's called addiction, and you have it. And if you don't address it, you will never be able to move forward in your life. And so I went back to 12-step meetings, completely new attitude, new perspective, and I started to put my heart and my soul into my recovery. I started to work the 12 steps. Now, by this point, it was 1991, and I had moved to San Francisco. So I got sober in 89. I stayed sober for a year. I went out for a year, got sober again in 91. Now I'm walking up the street in San Francisco and there's this big sign and it just says yoga. And this is 1991 and this is really truly before the explosion of yoga in the United States, just before. Right? It's coming, but it's not quite there yet. I walk into this class and there's a woman teaching. Her name is Janet McLeod. She's still teaching today. She's an Iyengar teacher. And what I remember about Janet is she moved with so much grace that to me it looked like a cartoon character. Hmm. Like she'd come into a posture and she'd bend her body to where I felt a body was going to bend to. But then she just kept going. Like it didn't seem possible or real. But the thing about how she moved was there was so much grace and elegance and freedom in her body. And I was like, that. I want that. I want that freedom. Because all addiction really is a quest for freedom, right? It's a quest for ease and comfort, as I had said before. And this was an outward representation of freedom. And I was immediately attracted to it. Mm. And I was like, wow, look at that. Wow, I could move like that. I would want to move like that, you know? And so I got into my first phase with yoga, which really lasted about 12 years, about 11 years, 12 years. And that phase was characterized by a lot of ego, a lot of emphasis on the outer form, the physical body, and the release and the relief that it gave me. So I'd lay there in Shavasana at the end of class. And I want to just tell you, I worked so hard in those classes. Hmm. You know, Downward Dog was a struggle.
Yeah, I remember my first few yoga classes.
Oh, my God.
I definitely can relate to not being able to do the asana practice because my body was so muscle bound.
Yes, yes. So whether you have built up strength, muscles in your body as an athlete, or you have tension patterns through your body, mm-hmm. I come to understand that addiction is really nothing more than a tension pattern. Mm. In the mind and the body. That's what it is. It's a particular pattern. So here yoga was going to begin to unravel that very deeply held tension in my body. But it was going to happen over time.
Yeah.
But even after a single class, I'd lay there in Shavasana and I would literally feel blood, energy, prana, life force go through my body. It was the most incredible feeling. And I remember thinking, I feel high. But it wasn't like a high off drugs. I felt that relief, that ease, that sense of transcendence or having raised myself up above a problem. Mm-hmm. And it was absolute joy and bliss. And so I kept coming back for it, but I had no idea what yoga held in store for me down the road. When I got beyond the physical and started looking at the subtle realms of yoga and understanding energy and the movement of prana and the direction of prana and healing the body at deeper levels and detoxifying the body at deeper levels. I mean, it was a revelation to me. And I'd been practicing yoga for 12 years when I finally found my teacher.
Wow. So you had just been continuously going to classes and basically integrating it into your daily life. And when did you first decide that you wanted to actually take yoga to the next level and begin learning from someone who, I would say, would not only take your practice to the next level, but also your sense of teaching and being able to share that with others?
Yes. Well, I need to be honest and say that for those first 12 years, it certainly wasn't a daily practice.
Oh, okay.
You know, there was in and out. There were periods where I'd be very dedicated, and then there'd be long periods. Maybe I wouldn't practice for a month or a week, or I'd miss 5 days and then come back to it. So it was very much very challenging for me. As much as I love the feeling that it produced, it was still challenging for me to devote or discipline myself to get there. But I stayed with it. The answer to your question, yoga chose me. I didn't make a decision that I was going to go to a deeper level. What ended up happening for me is I lost the ability to move. And I don't know if you know that piece of my story, but I was still engaged in addictive behavior. In my case, it was gambling, really severe gambling, and cigarette smoking. So disconnection with my breath, and really struggling in relationships with women, my romantic relationships, really tough, like filled with stress. So even though I had put down drugs and alcohol, my primary addictions, it was still in me. And I refer to it as the frequency of addiction in a book that I wrote called Recovery 2.0. I write all about this unfolding through yoga of my life. So there I was in 2003, carrying a lot of stress in my body, a little bit lost, sober 12 years from drugs and alcohol, feeling good about that, but still engaged in these other behaviors. And it took its toll on my body. I came back from Las Vegas after a horrendous weekend of gambling. I was dancing at a concert, and an excruciating pain shot through my back, down through my hips, down through my legs, down through my feet, and I collapsed on the ground in pain. No idea what had happened. At the time, I had no awareness of how my behavior as a compulsive gambler could lead to some kind of traumatic event in the body. I didn't get it. And my friends were there, and they were like, "What, Tommy, what's going on?" I'm like, "I don't know, but something terrible has just happened. Something terrible has just happened." And for the next 9 months, I could stand and I could move slowly, but I was just in pain from morning until night. I had no strength in my legs. The minute I woke up, put my feet on the ground, pain began. Went to bed at night and took my legs up off the ground and laid down, and the pain would subside a bit. This went on. I went to every kind of healer that you can find in LA. And as you probably know, that's every kind of healer.
Yeah, right? I'm sure you went to plenty. Acupuncture, yoga.
Oh my God, chiropractor, massage, trainers, yoga teachers, meditation teachers, everything. But nothing was getting, it wasn't getting any better. And I was 35 at the time, and quite literally terrified that this was the end of my life as a person who could move in their body well. A friend came up to me and said, so first I went and I finally broke down and went and I got an MRI at a prominent hospital in Los Angeles. And the surgeon and the radiologist were there. My wife, Kia, was there by my side, and they read my MRI and they said, "We don't know how you're standing right now. You have severe degenerative disc disease. You have two herniations at L3, L4, and L4, L5. And you are going to be on drugs for the rest of your life for this pain. It never gets better. It only gets worse. And eventually you're going to be on a table and we're going to have to operate on you. That was the third bottom of my life, that moment. And I became utterly humbled, utterly willing to do whatever it took not to have that fate play out in my life. A few days later, a friend came up to me and said, "Tommy, if you really want to fix your back, you need to see this man named Guru Prem." Guru Prem. And to be honest with you, my inner dialogue was, "I'm not going to see anybody named Guru Prem."
What was your fear?
Well, it was more like, I'm fed up with gurus. I'm fed up with all of these folks. I'm close-minded to the idea of going to see this someone, anyone who referred to themselves as Guru Prem. I'm not going. Like, just shut my mind. Closed. So that night, that same night, I went out to dinner with Kia, my wife, across town. And there was a bubbly woman at the table next to ours. She struck up a conversation with us. "Hey, how are you guys?" We're like, we're just fine. How are you? She's like, "I'm great. I just got to LA." And we're like, "Well, that's wonderful. What brings you here?" And she's like, "Well, I came to see this man named Guru Prem." Same night. Mm-hmm. So I call him. I call him the next morning. "Apparently, I'm supposed to come see you." Mm-hmm. He says, "Well, we better get you in here then." So I go to his office in Beverly Hills, apparently where all the gurus hang out, knock on his door, and boom, it's him. White turban, long white beard, salt and pepper beard at the time, glasses, flowing white robes, I mean the whole deal.
Yeah.
And my inner dialogue again is like, "Oh my God, has it come to this?" Like, I can't believe it. You know, I grew up in New York City and a little bit cynical, and you know, this was very far outside of what I had imagined my salvation was going to look like. So I sat in Guru Prem's office. On the floor, he had a yoga mat. I sat on one end of the yoga mat. He sat on the other end of the yoga mat facing me. And I looked at him. I looked at his face. And in that moment, what I was seeing for the first time in my life was a contented human being. I had never seen that before. And it was powerful. I sat in front of him and I was like, wow. And I knew in that moment, now this had been 9 months of me being in pain, and I'm thinking things like, my life as I knew it is over. But I sat in front of him and for the first time in 9 months, I knew I was going to be okay. I knew I would be okay. Now, I wasn't cured by any means. My back was killing me that day. And I sat on that mat, and it must have been the ugliest posture that he's seen on a yoga mat, right? But I said, whatever this guy has, I'm coming for it. And I started to see him once a week, pretty much for the next 5 years. Like clockwork. I'd be there Wednesday, 12 noon, in his office, and he'd teach me how to breathe. That was the first thing, is he taught me how to breathe properly. And no, I had never in 12 years of yoga, no one had taught me how to breathe. I had no idea how to take a deep breath to the bottom of my lungs, how to fill up my mid lungs, how to fill up my upper lungs, how to breathe to my fullest capacity. I had no idea how to use the breath to enter a meditative state. No one had showed me how to use the breath to change my emotional state. And Guru Prem was about to teach me all of those things. He was about to give me the keys to the kingdom. Because I was somebody who had been looking for ease and comfort my whole life. And it was literally right under my nose the entire time. And the breath was it. So we started there. He taught me all these incredible breaths. We learned Kundalini Yoga. He taught me how to move. How to move the body, coordinated with breath. It was different than vinyasa. It was more surgical. Precise, deeper in some way.
Were those the kriyas?
Kriyas. He taught me some kriyas, so these sets of exercises that would lead to a particular place, like what we've practiced together before. Mm-hmm. And he taught me meditation in the Kundalini system. And these were meditations that often they were very difficult. They required a certain kind of focus or holding your arms up for long periods of time. Very challenging. But as you sat there in silence after the challenging part was over, much easier to enter that one-pointed stillness, what we call shunya. That shunya, that to be able to get beyond your thinking and to access a deeper place of consciousness. He taught me how to do that. And when he taught me how to do that, ease and healing and health started to come into my life.
Wow.
90 days after I met Guru Prem, my back pain went away.
Just completely?
100%.
Wow. Just through using the breath and doing
breath
these
and
different
movement,
practices.
Talking. I would say that, honestly, his love and his presence had a lot to do with it. I changed up my diet a lot. That had something to do with it, for sure. But that 90 days from when I met him to 90 days later was this scary process. Because I remember saying to him, like, we're 20 or 30 days in. I'm like, God, I'm not there yet. I'm still in pain. Is this going to work? Is this going to work? And he's like, just take it easy, you know? And that was always the mantra, really. Just take it easy. Because what had actually happened through my addictive behavior and all the stress I was carrying was nothing was too easy.
Yeah,
everything was
tension.
Hard. Tension. Boom. So that was 13 years ago.
Wow.
I've never looked back. I took the Kundalini Yoga teacher training. After that, I took a Hatha, a 200-hour Hatha training with Kia and the wonderful Annie Carpenter.
Yes.
Through Yoga Works.
Yes.
And I started to teach right away after that. And all this work of recovery, all the 12-step work that I had done, those first 12 years, it combined so beautifully and became more powerful and more meaningful and relevant with the yoga as a complement to it.
Mm.
And so now I teach Recovery 2.0, which is really just all the lessons that Guru Prem gifted me with those years.
But now unified with your education from your own recovery and your experience through finding health and happiness in your body.
Precisely.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's absolutely amazing.
It is amazing. I say thank you every day. I don't always know who I'm thanking. I just say thank you all the time. And it's the greatest life. And when I think back to the many bottoms, the three that I've mentioned here and probably a few others along the way, it's just a miracle. Because, you know, I mean, listen, I said no to Guru Prem. I said no to a deeper level of healing. I just didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And the universe was like, no, no, you're going to say yes to this. And so I literally say, how could I take credit for my practice? Sure, I have to show up and I have to practice and the action will be mine, but the fruit of my action is not mine.
Yeah.
Giving it up.
That's the way.
Yeah, well, that's what I just see. I see the beauty of the design pushing me forward towards healing and then being able to help other people. As a result of that, I see the elegance of the design.
Hmm.
It's a miracle. It's unbelievable. So I'm really in this state of gratitude. And on those moments, on those days where I fall out of gratitude, I enter that space of complaining. It's got nothing to do with anybody except me. It's originating from ego once again. And it's another opportunity for growth whenever that happens. So it's a work in progress.
As every single day is, as all yoga is. Mm. I feel like from taking your class, your Kundalini class, and really understanding the depth of the breath and how imperative that is to opening up the body, could you describe more about how Kundalini yoga, say, differs from your normal Hatha yoga class?
Sure. Hatha yoga really is about the union of opposites. male, female, masculine, feminine polarities coming together mm-hmm. to bring about a sense of unity in the mind-body system. It also, in very physical terms, it does strengthen the body. It creates stability as well as flexibility if it's taught well mm-hmm. and if it's practiced correctly. So you're working with the connective tissue of the body, the muscles, the fascia, the tendons and the ligaments. You're working with all of this connective tissue to expand possibility in the body. You're being able to bring in through the breath prana, life force, through that practice and directing it around the body in different kinds of ways. That's a big, big piece of the Hatha yoga practice. And it's very powerful and it's very enjoyable. And it's a lovely practice. And it's a practice that's challenging enough for a lifetime. Mm-hmm. So I just don't believe that anybody actually masters Hatha yoga. I think you're just always working at it. And of mm-hmm. course, as you become an older person, so I'm 49 at this point, I'm not practicing yoga in the way I was when I was 29. Mm-hmm. My needs are different. My body is different. And so I'm needing to take my Hatha yoga practice day by day, wherever I'm at, in the strength level and the flexibility level of my body, right? So that's all beautiful, and that's Hatha. Kundalini yoga is known as the yoga of awareness. It begs the question, what are we becoming aware of?
Mm-hmm. Right? That was exactly what I was going to ask.
Right. We're becoming aware of our true nature. So it's by definition, in a way, it's a more subtle, deeper form of yoga. Not deeper meaning better, just deeper, getting into the deeper levels of a human being's five koshas, if you will. So we're working with the subtle body. We're working with the nervous system, the endocrine system. We're working with the breath. Ultimately, we're trying to connect with the divinity that is within each one of us. Mm-hmm. It's a perspective. It's a vantage point. I don't want any student, anyone who comes to my class, I don't want them to believe anything that I say. I want them to experience what they experience and make up their own mind about it. That's the beautiful thing about yoga. Kundalini yoga delivers, for most people who practice it, some form of experience. You feel it. You seem to be able to get in touch with a more subtle part of yourself. As that happens, you experience an expanded state of awareness. I don't mean that in esoteric terms. I simply mean that you are aware of more than you used to be. It translates into your relationships. Mm-hmm. You might be aware of a person's emotions. You might catch it in a way that you didn't used to catch it. You might be aware of your relationship with food, and that shifts in a deep, deep way. You might be aware of your relationship to your environment around you. Clutter might be a problem for you in a way that it didn't used to be a problem for you. Different things. You'll start noticing shifts in the way you are in your body, in your relationships, and in the world. That was my experience with Kundalini yoga. I also have found that it really is very good at releasing subconscious patterning, what I would call subconscious patterning. The way I would describe it is this. Imagine you're trying to quit smoking cigarettes, as I was for many years. You try and you try and you try, and there's sort of an element of white knuckling, like you're really putting in the effort, but a part of you is still sort of stuck with it. Mm-hmm. A part of you still wants to do the behavior for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. So you're stuck in that addiction for a period of time. For me, through the practice of Kundalini yoga, I no longer had to try to stop smoking. It just fell away from my life. Mm. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense in the sense of habits and how just like smoking could be a subconscious habitual practice where you don't even realize what it feels like to pick up a cigarette and put it to your lips and bam, you're smoking again. Yes. And you're like, oh goodness, why am I smoking right now? But until you adapt another habit that becomes so much more fulfilling that you don't even need to smoke a cigarette. So it's, from at least my practice of yoga, I would say that I had an addictive habitual practice of partying and going out and being social and finding that my sense of awareness of myself was heightened by my egotistic self being in a social setting.
Yes.
So with my yoga practice, that allowed me to become more introspective of myself. And the more that I practiced with myself, the less I needed to be going out and partying and having these experiences where I'm with the friends and taking the pictures and all that kind of stuff. It was like, I didn't even really think about it anymore.
Yes. I love it. I love it. Well, that's a very similar experience to me.
Yeah.
The Kundalini energy, so not speaking of Kundalini yoga as taught by Yogi Bhajan, but just the word Kundalini has a long history in yoga and really talking about the latent potential of a human being and how to unlock that. So Yogi Bhajan, when he brought his kriyas and his mantras and his meditations to the United States in the late 60s and early 70s, really was about specifically transforming people out of bad habits into life-enhancing behaviors, right? And becoming a stronger, more capable individual who is truly in touch with their truest, innermost self. That's the goal there. And then from that place, you just teach. You just present. You creatively create a life from your heart's desire.
Mm-hmm.
You have that power where before you didn't have that power. You felt maybe at the mercy of circumstances or the mercy of people. And then you get to this place where you're pretty much beyond complaint, except for some petty nonsense that comes up now and then.
Yeah.
And so the Kundalini has made me very, very strong inside and out.
Well, it shows, definitely.
Thank you.
I wanted to come back to your book because I feel that the experience of putting together all of this amazing awareness into these pages that are now your book, what would you say are three takeaways that you want people to have from reading your book?
Thank you. First takeaway would be we're constantly evolving. To try to fight that evolution is very painful. I look at evolution as swapping a story that we carry about ourselves for another story, hopefully a better story about ourselves. And it's a continuous swapping of one story for the next, which moves us forward. Of course, the way that we see ourselves, think about ourselves, the deep held beliefs that we carry are going to determine the outcome of our life. So digging down and really looking at what are those beliefs? How can I develop new beliefs that are going to bring about more power and more possibility for me to create and realize my full potential as a human being? So that's the first is we're evolving. Change is happening. It's going to keep happening. We try not to hang on to old stories that no longer serve us. Second takeaway, the 12 steps work. They really work. They help to lift a person out of addiction into recovery. They provide an epic, solid, amazing foundation for recovery. I want people to understand that. The 12 steps are painfully, dreadfully misunderstood. So part of the book is to try to explain and make more accessible this beautiful philosophy and spirituality. I say to people, though, in the same breath, that the 12 steps really are the first step. That I don't think it's a good idea to make the 12 steps your entire life. But I think that you get a life because of the 12 steps, and then you get an opportunity to explore this extraordinary world and the wonderland of consciousness, as we've spoken about in class. The third takeaway, there's so many, but I'll try to keep it to three. The third takeaway is our relationship with food is critical. I can't overstate it. You know, the cliche about people in recovery is they drink a lot of coffee, they smoke cigarettes, and they eat donuts. And that's not far from the truth about a lot of folks who haven't yet stepped into a greater, more conscious relationship with food. You are what you eat really turns out to be true.
Truth indeed.
So on this path of yoga, I would say what it's given me is a heightened understanding of the power of food. Also the power of prayer and being grateful for your food. My incredible teacher, Guru Prem, said, you know, a child can never be spoiled if they just pray a prayer of gratitude before they eat their food. You could never be spoiled if you do that from the heart. So I take that to heart. And prayer before food, eating really well. I find that if you eat addictively, you think addictively. Mm-hmm. And if you're someone like me, you don't want to be thinking addictively. It's just, it's going to move you away from comfort, away from ease. And then you find yourself acting out in other ways, as we've seen that I have done that in my life. So the transition to a healthy diet has, man, it has made such a big difference in my life.
Certainly. The chemicals within that we put into our body from the food are just as effective as the ones that we produce from our brains.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So this actually brings me to where I want to finish up at, which is for our listeners who are listening at home, or in their cars, or on their way to their next yoga class, what is one golden nugget of wisdom that you can pass on to them?
The power of community. Nothing worthwhile happens alone in this world. Everything is a collaboration. Even meditation is a collaboration. You're collaborating with the person who created the mat you're sitting on, or the couch you're sitting on, or the floor you're sitting on. You're collaborating with a community of other people. You're collaborating and you're building your own consciousness on the shoulders of teachers that have come before you. Everything is a collaboration. Everything is a co-creation. Nothing belongs to us. We're just passing through. And so to connect in with community, to be uplifted by community is so powerful, whether you're on a path of recovery from addiction, or you're on a spiritual path, or you're just trying to be the best you can be. People, other people, are going to play a major role in your life. At every single place where I had to get to that next plateau and get up to that next level, there was always a teacher and loving people there, a community of support, people who could hold a high bar, people who held the light. They carried the light and they showed you the way. And, you know, when we say our mantra at the beginning of class, Om Namo, Gurudev Namo, it's honoring the people, the teachers that have come before, without whose efforts we couldn't possibly be here right now. Mm-hmm. So consciousness is contagious.
That's the truth.
You got to catch it. And you want to be around people who carry a high consciousness so you can catch it from them.
Yes, indeed. Well, the Yoga Revealed podcast listeners are better for your knowledge, and we absolutely appreciate your time today.
Thank you so much.
Sat Nam.
Sat Nam.
Blessings.
Blessings. Namaste.
Namaste. Yoga Revealers, if you have loved ones or you yourself have faced some type of addiction, be sure to check out Tommy Rosen's upcoming free online Recovery 2.0 conference this September 14th to the 18th, 2016. That's next week. It all starts on Wednesday, and I'll meet you there. Learn to move beyond addiction and upgrade your life. You'll have access to cutting-edge interviews full of inspirational, medical, and practical approaches to overcoming addictions of all kinds. Join us online by clicking Recovery 2.0 at yogareveal.com. See you there, Yoga Revealers.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.